impressed them that what they said was bigger than golf balls.
Well, it is 9 o'clock. Good morning, everyone. It is 9 o'clock, so I do want to get started. There's a lot of material, as always, to try to get through. I know that there are other people that are going to be sort of coming in here as we get going. But, yeah, I did not. It rained at my house all day, but that last storm, it missed us. I could see all the lightning from my front window and hear all the thunder, but it wasn't actually raining at our house. So, okay, well, not many of us today. Makes me wonder if everyone's bored. So, but anyway, you should have in front of you a set of notes for lesson 90, the two streams of Bibles, model of transmission, its origins and accuracy. This is part four, and the focus this time is on the Adventism of Wilkinson, okay? And I'll explain what that means as we get started. So, it is not my intention by any stretch of the imagination to try to read everything that's in these notes, okay? These notes are 16 pages long with a works cited on the 17th page. So some of it we'll read, some of it I've bolded some stuff that I want to read in class, and then you guys can read the rest of it sort of on your own time if you're interested, okay? But again, this is lesson 90, the two streams of Bibles, model of transmission, its origins and accuracy, part four, the Adventism of Wilkinson. Okay, so let's just get right into the introduction as people come in. So, point number one, for the last three lessons, 87, 88, and 89, we have been studying the two streams of Bibles, model of transmission. In doing so, we have observed the following points, okay? So the first thing we looked at was the two streams of Bible's view of transmission. I presented like 16 different charts, tables, diagrams of that to you. Second thing is we looked at the historical origins of the two streams of Bible's paradigm. Third, we looked at my first questioning of the two streams of Bible's paradigm. In lesson 87, we looked at the Gothic translation. And in lesson 88, we looked at the Peshitta. And then fourthly, last Sunday in lesson 89, we looked at my public questioning of the two streams of Bible's paradigm and how that took shape around looking at the Old Latin versus Latin Vulgate dichotomy. And I covered that last Sunday in lesson 89, okay? So in lessons 87 and 88, we identify the historical origins of the paradigm in the writings of Benjamin G. Wilkinson. We then trace this development and progression in subsequent works by Jasper James Ray and Peter S. Ruckman. In summation, we notice the following progression. 1930, Benjamin G. Wilkinson wrote Our Authorized Bible Vindicated. So again, that's this book right here, written in 1930. So from now on, through the notes, I've abbreviated that. Okay. So every time you see that abbreviation in italics, OABV, that's short for Our Authorized Bible Vindicated. So I didn't have to type that every single time. Okay. So 1930, we had Benjamin Wilkinson, Our Authorized Bible Vindicated. Then 1955, we had Jasper James Ray, God Wrote Only One Bible, which contains a chapter titled, Historically Only Two Streams of Bibles Have Come to Us. That's chapter two. And moreover, on pages 59 and 87, Ray depicts his corrupt and pure trees of Bibles. Then in 1964, Peter S. Ruckman wrote The Bible Babel, which contained diagrams of good and corrupt trees of Bibles. In addition, we observed in lesson 88 that Ruckman's trees are nearly identical to the ones presented by Ray 14 years earlier in 1955. And then in 1970, we have David Otis Fuller's book, Which Bible? Okay, edited by David Otis Fuller, Which Bible? This volume contains an edited reprint of Wilkinson's 1930 work, Our Authorized Bible Vindicated, including the entirety of chapter one, which is titled Fundamentally Only Two Different Bibles. Okay, so that's all review. We went over that in lessons 87 and 88. Okay, furthermore, we observed how once this notion was deposited into the thought stream by Wilkinson, it was picked up by later defenders of the traditional text and the authorized version and advanced in an uncritical manner. Through the twin influences of Ruckman and Fuller, the two streams of Bible's paradigm of transmission cemented itself into the argumentation of the King James only movement. Later, pro-King James authors repeated this talking point in some manner to varying degrees. Okay? So, top page 2. The goal of this lesson, lesson 90, the goal of this lesson is an in-depth consideration of Wilkinson's reliability as the fountainhead of the two streams paradigm. In order to accomplish this task, we will consider the following points, okay? Point number 1, we're going to look at the Adventism of Wilkinson, his Seventh-day Adventist affiliations, okay? Second, we're going to look at how a fellow Adventist is going to criticize the two streams paradigm that Wilkinson puts out, okay? So that'll be our second point. And then last, we're going to look at the spirit of prophecy and Wilkinson's defense of his model, okay? So we're going to do that. We're not going to read everything. Some of it I've bolded. Some of it I'm just going to skip, because if I try to read everything, we'll be here for 2 hours, and obviously that's not going to work, okay? So point number 1 then for this lesson is the Adventism of Wilkinson. In lesson 87, and again in the introduction to this lesson, we noted that David Otis Fuller, editor of the 1970 publication Which Bible, included an edited reprint of Wilkinson's 1930 book, Our Authorized Bible Vindicated. Okay? So this is my copy of Which Bible, edited by David Otis Fuller. This book from 1970 contains a reprint of much of what was in Wilkinson's book from 1930. Okay? Consuming 146 pages of Which Bible, material from the pen of Wilkinson comprised 46% of the book. So 46% of Fuller's book from 1970 is edited extracts from Wilkinson's book from 1930. Okay? If you read the next sentence, in this section of Which Bible, Fuller reprinted 10 chapters of Wilkinson's 16-chapter work. So Wilkinson's book has 16 chapters in it. David Otis Fuller reproduced 10 of those 16 chapters in Which Bible, which he put out in 1970. Okay? So nearly half of Which Bible contains information that was first written by who? By Wilkinson. Okay? I think that should be clear enough. So beginning on page 174 of the fifth edition of Which Bible and ending on page 175, Fuller introduced Wilkinson to his readers in the following manner, quote, Benjamin G. Wilkinson, Ph.D., is all but unknown to the world of scholarship, but once his book is carefully considered, it will be evident that he is a scholar of the first rank with a thorough knowledge of the subjects about which he wrote. Dr. Wilkinson taught for many years in a small and obscure Eastern college. For this excellent work, which he produced, he secured copyrights in both England and America back in 1930. Dr. Wilkinson's book is a cogent presentation of little-known facts, along with a thrilling review of the battle that began in Eden with Satan's skeptical question, "Yea, hath God said?" and has continued unabated until the present hour. With such a surfeit of Bible translations and such profound confusion existing in Christian circles, Dr. Wilkinson's work will go a long way in bringing into proper focus and perspective the whole question on where final authority lies and just what we can trust with confidence in the midst of this multiplicity of versions, end quote. So that's what Fuller said about Wilkinson. Okay? So again, 10 chapters of this book he's putting into this book. 46% of this book is stuff that he got from Wilkinson. Okay? What I just read to you is the introduction to Wilkinson that is in Which Bible. That's how Fuller introduces him to his readership. Okay? The remainder of the introductory material on page 175 is a verbatim reproduction of the foreword to Our Authorized Bible Vindicated by Wilkinson. So the rest of the stuff in the beginning of that section is just the foreword, him quoting the foreword from this. Okay? So look at the next sentence. From Fuller's introduction, readers of Which Bible are left with the following impressions of Wilkinson. Number 1, he is a scholar of the first rank. Number 2, he taught for many years in a small and obscure, however unnamed, Eastern College. And three, copyrights were secured by Wilkinson in both England and America. Beyond these three pieces of information, readers of which Bible are told nothing about Wilkinson's background. Okay? So understand, does he tell them about who Wilkinson is? Does Fuller fully explain who Wilkinson is to his readership? No. Okay? Those are the only three things that he tells them. Okay? Look at the next point. It was at a meeting of the Dean Bergen Society in 1989 that Gary R. Hudson, a former Ruckmanite, asked Society President D.A. Waite if he knew anything about Benjamin G. Wilkinson. So that's 1989. That's nearly 20 years after Fuller first published this book. Okay? Waite proceeded to inform Hudson that Wilkinson was a Seventh-day Adventist. So I'm going to abbreviate that SDA hereafter. Okay? By way of follow-up, Hudson asked Waite if Fuller was aware of Wilkinson's Adventism, to which Waite replied, yes, but he didn't like to mention it because he knew how people might react. So does Fuller know that if people knew that Wilkinson was a Seventh-day Adventist, they might strongly object to the content that was included in this book from the pen of a Seventh-day Adventist? Okay. After learning this piece of information about Wilkinson, Gary R. Hudson and Doug Kudelik, now let me just say one thing about those guys. Those guys are critics of the King James Bible. Okay, I'm not including them here because I agree with everything they say. I'm including them here because of what they accurately report about the matter that we're talking about right now. Okay, so Gary R. Hudson and Doug Kudelik secured an original 1930 copy of our Authorized Bible Vindicated, and learned that the small and obscure Eastern College mentioned by Fuller was an SDA training school called Washington Missionary College, now known as Washington Adventist University. Not only did Wilkinson teach there for many years, but the title page identified him as the Dean of Theology. So the small, obscure Eastern school that Fuller mentions is really a Seventh-day Adventist training college, and Wilkinson, the author of this, was the Dean of Theology at the Seventh-day Adventist training school, but none of that is told to the readers of what? Of which Bible? Is everybody with me so far? Okay. The SDA publication Review and Herald ran the following obituary for Benjamin G. Wilkinson on May 2nd, 1968. Now again, there's a lot of this. I'm just going to sort of give you the flavor of this, okay? Benjamin Wilkinson, Benjamin George, was born June 20, 1872 in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and he died January 25, 1968 in Riverdale, Maryland. His family became Adventist through the reading of The Great Controversy. That was Ellen G. White's book. In 1891, he began to study for the ministry at Battle Creek College. The following year, he began evangelism in Wisconsin. He received a Bachelor of Arts degree in 1897 at the University of Michigan. He became Dean of Theology at Battle Creek College that same year and was called to the presidency of the Canadian Conference in 1898. That means the conference is the SDA denominational organization. Okay? So his family is Adventist. He's Adventist. He's going to be a prominent person in the Adventist denomination. The following year, he became Dean of Theology at Union College. From 1901 to 1905, he was president of the Latin Conference, now Southern European Division. During those years, he started our work in Rome, Paris, and Spain. So is Benjamin Wilkinson a high-ranking member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church that is starting Seventh-day Adventist conferences in Spain and Rome and Paris? So is he basically a missionary? Okay. Now we could read the rest of that. I don't think we need to. I think you get the point, right? It goes on to talk about the different colleges he served at, where he got his PhD, and the fact that he was Dean of Theology at a few different places and as a high-ranking member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in his tenure with that before he dies in 1968. Okay. So I'm not going to read any more of the obituary. I think you get the point at this juncture. So let's go to the next point. So not only was Wilkinson an Adventist, but he was one of the movement's leading advocates during the first half of the 20th century. There can be little doubt that David Otis Fuller intentionally suppressed Wilkinson's identity as a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church from the readership of which Bible. This fact is brought into focus when one considers how Fuller edited the portions of Our Authorized Bible Vindicated that were reprinted in which Bible to obscure Wilkinson's Adventism. Okay? So, is Wilkinson clearly a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church? He's a missionary, he's dean of theology at the training school, he's a high-ranking member of that particular denomination, okay? Fuller obscures this from his readers, and he does so on purpose, knowing that his fundamental Baptist readers would not approve of him, would not approve of a lot of the stuff that he had to say because, and on account of the fact that Wilkinson was a Seventh-day Adventist member, okay? So let's look at the next point there. As part of this premeditated fraud, Fuller sought to remove telling remarks and references which would have clued the reader to Wilkinson's background. So as Fuller is editing Wilkinson and including extracts in which Bible, he is removing things intentionally that would have given away the fact that Wilkinson was a what?
Adventist.
Okay? The most blatant of these is Fuller's deletion of a footnote on page 215 of which Bible, corresponding to page 42 of Wilkinson's original edition. As the reproductions accompanying this article show, Wilkinson quoted the Seventh-day Adventist prophetess Ellen G. White as authoritative. So Wilkinson's quoting Ellen G. White, the prophetess of Seventh-day Adventism, as authoritative. Look at the next sentence. Fuller kept the quotation in, but concealed the source by deleting the footnote. So he retains Wilkinson's quotation of Ellen G. White in which Bible, but he deletes the footnote to Ellen G. White, obscuring the fact that Wilkinson is quoting whom? Ellen G. White. Now, why would he do that? Because he doesn't want the readers of which Bible to know that this guy is what? An Adventist. Okay? How many thousands have read this page, not being aware that they were reading from a foundational book of Adventism, Ellen G. White's The Great Controversy? Wilkinson, while quoting from White, dropped following the words hatred and persecution. White's description of the Waldensians as those who kept the true Sabbath, which would have warned the readers that something was not right. So you can find that on there's the page references for the Great Controversy. Wilkinson, of course, was not disagreeing with White or concealing his true views, just shortening a quotation, a different intent than Fuller. This is not the only place where Fuller deleted a Wilkinson reference to White. On pages 60 and 61 of Our Authorized Bible Vindicated, Wilkinson quoted two lengthy passages from White's The Great Controversy. Had Fuller not deleted this quotation and the corresponding footnote, they would have appeared on page 233 of which Bible immediately before the first paragraph on that page. So is everybody following that? So is there funny business with the editing? The funny business with the editing is being done on purpose to obscure the fact that Wilkinson is a what? Seventh-day Adventist. Okay, so look at the next point. So David Otis Fuller purposefully concealed the identity of Wilkinson from his fundamental Baptist readership. Meanwhile, Fuller's actions moved the two streams of Bible's paradigm of transmission into the mainstream of King James-only argumentation. Fuller's shenanigans aside, note Ellen G. White's view of the Waldensians from the above citation as those who, quote, kept the true Sabbath. Herein lies a clue as to why Wilkinson erected a dichotomy between the Old Latin Waldensian Bible and the Latin Vulgate, the Catholic Bible. So remember last week we looked at that dichotomy, right? And we studied that. And we made some conclusions that the whole thing isn't really the way they say, okay? Ellen G. White, a founding prophetess of the Seventh-day Adventist movement, viewed the Waldensians as the spiritual forebears of the Adventist movement. If the Waldensians kept the pure Sabbath, according to White, that perhaps they also used a pure Bible, as argued by Wilkinson. So is everybody with me? Ellen G. White, a founding prophetess of the Seventh-day Adventist movement, says particular things about the Waldensians. Now, in our authorized Bible Vindicated, Wilkinson in 1930 is going to say particular things about the Waldensians and say that they're using the pure Bible of the Old Latin as in contradistinction to the corrupt Bible of the Latin Vulgate, which was Catholic. Okay? This is, the motivation for this is all being dictated by the Adventist, the Seventh-day Adventist view of the Waldensians, not by a textual evaluation of the facts. Okay? So look at the next point. Chapter 2 of Wilkinson's book is titled, The Bible Adopted by Constantine and the Pure Bible of the Waldensians. It is in this chapter that Wilkinson moves to establish his dichotomy between the Old Latin and the Latin Vulgate. Note the following citation. Wilkinson says, quote, "The Latin Vulgate, the Sinaiticus, the Vaticanus, the Hexapla, Jerome, Eusebius, and Origen are terms for ideas that are inseparable in the minds of those who know. The type of Bible selected by Constantine has held the dominant influence at all times in the history of the Catholic Church. This Bible was different from the Bible of the Waldensians, and as a result of this difference, the Waldensians were the object of hatred and cruel persecution, as we shall now show. In studying this history, we shall see how it was possible for the pure manuscripts not only to live, but actually to gain the ascendance in the face of powerful opposition." So let me just say, I believe the Waldensians were Bible believers, and I believe they were persecuted by the Catholic Church. But understand, that's Wilkinson is using this to say something more than that. Okay. Later in the same chapter, on pages 28 and 29, Wilkinson quotes Frederick Nolan's 1815 work on an inquiry into the integrity of the Greek Vulgate regarding the Waldensian Bible, just before he presents his dichotomous chart of, quote, two parallel streams of Bibles on page 30. Recall that this was the chart, Recall that it was on this chart that Wilkinson placed the Old Latin Bible of the Waldensians in the pure stream and the Roman Catholic Latin Vulgate in the corrupt stream. These placements are not based upon any discussion of the textual evidence, seeing that Wilkinson provided zero textual justification for placing them as he did. Okay? So here's a summary to make sure you're on board with me. Benjamin G. Wilkinson, author of Our Authorized Bible Vindicated in 1930, was an active member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church during the first half of the 20th century. In 1970, Fundamental Baptist David Otis Fuller included an edited version of 10 chapters from Wilkinson's book, In Which Bible? Fuller purposefully moved to obscure Wilkinson's identity as an Adventist from his readership through selectively editing the extracts that were reproduced in Which Bible. Okay, now I went through that fast because I have a time limit here. Does anybody have a quick question or statement about that before we get to the second point? So we can all see that Fuller is playing fast and loose and moving to obscure the identity of Wilkinson as an Adventist. Can we all acknowledge that?
I can see why he did it, though. He didn't want people to automatically discard Wilkinson's views because he was an Adventist.
I understand why he did it. I don't think he was honest in doing it.
Well, I agree with that.
Okay. So then let's look at the point two, which is SDA criticism of the two streams paradigm. So, in 1931... So a year later, Wilkinson wrote this in 1930, a year later, 1931, fellow Adventist Warren Eugene Howell wrote a 125-page review of Wilkinson's book titled, A Review of Our Authorized Bible Vindicated by Benjamin G. Wilkinson. Howell's book is available for free on the Ellen G. White Writings website. In his book, Howell takes Wilkinson to task on many different aspects of his argumentation. For the sake of time and space, We will only deal with those aspects of Howell's refutation that deal directly with the two streams of Bible's paradigm. Please note that the website presents Howell's review in a series of 30 different screens. For documentation purposes, I have followed the screen numbering utilized by the Ellen G. White Writings website. So when we get into the quotes and you see, for example, 3 of 30, I'm just using their numbering system that this website used, okay? Because I don't have a paper copy of the book. So, the first objection offered by Howell establishes beyond doubt that Wilkinson was a member of the SDA Church. Howell chides him for failing to publish Our Authorized Bible Vindicated via an accredited SDA publishing house, as well as for not abiding by the request of the Seventh-day Adventist General Conference to cease discussing the Bible version question. So apparently there was a big scuttlebutt within the Seventh-day Adventist Church at this time over the issue of translations, which no doubt prompted Wilkinson to write the book and so forth. Okay, so let's look at what Howell says. He says, quote, "Two vital facts immediately appear upon opening the volume to the title page. The first is the hidden identity of the printers, as there is no imprint of any publisher whatsoever. It is significant that the manuscript was neither submitted to nor published by any accredited Seventh-day Adventist publishing house. In other words, the authorization of the book itself is not vindicated as an approved denominational production. It was published in the disregard of General Conference counsel over the plea of the executive officers that agitation of this question should cease." Okay? So is there any doubt that Wilkinson is an Adventist?
No.
No doubt. Okay? Absolutely no doubt. Regarding the establishment of, quote, two parallel streams of Bible's paradigm, Howell calls it, quote, arbitrary and a creation of Wilkinson that does not, quote, rest upon historical authority. His full quote states, "Two parallel streams of Bibles, page 43, arbitrarily created by the author and formed for a purpose and does not rest upon historical authority." So Howell, a fellow Adventist, is now saying that Wilkinson just what?
Made it up.
That it rests on his own authority, that there's no historical evidence that the two streams of Bibles paradigm is what? True. And so here's a fellow Adventist criticizing him for this. Okay? Second, Howell sees Wilkinson's book as a revival of the arguments put forth over 100 years earlier by Frederick Nolan in his 1815 book, An Inquiry into the Integrity of the Greek Vulgate or the Received Text of the New Testament, in which the Greek manuscripts are newly classed, the integrity of the authorized text vindicated in the various readings traced to their origin. That's the whole title. Yeah, try reading the actual book. It's not easy. Howell even points out the similarities between the titles of the two volumes. So look at this next page. I'm only going to read what's in bold here. Got to start saving time here. Okay? But I've given you the whole thing. So this is quoting Howell. It is decidedly informative to discover that the contention of this author is simply a revival of an effort made more than 100 years ago to establish this same claim. A book was printed in 1815, and that would be Frederick Nolan's book. Okay? Dropping the next paragraph. In passing, it may be remarked the striking similarity in objective between the two books of 1930 and a century previous, as well as the very expression in the title page of the 1815 volume, The Authorized Text Vindicated. So Frederick Nolan has in his title the statement, the Authorized Text Vindicated. What's the name of Wilkinson's book? Our Authorized Bible what? Vindicated. Okay? Go to the next dark bullet. In a section titled The Argument Upon the Italia, Howell deals with Wilkinson's dichotomous argument that the Old Latin of the Waldensians is pure, whereas Jerome's Latin Vulgate is corrupt. Okay? Now, let's just read a little bit of this so you get the sort of the context. One of the arguments used by the author to establish his claim of transmission of The pure apostolic text by the early Christians of northern Italy is this, quote, "It is held that the pre-Waldensian Christians of northern Italy could not have had doctrines purer than Rome unless their Bible was purer than Rome's. That is, was not Rome's falsified manuscripts." Okay? The utter unsoundness of this argument is will readily appear when we apply it to our own movement. According to this view, it would be impossible for us to hold any purer view concerning Christian doctrine than that which is held by the other churches unless we had a purer Bible than they. But we use identically the same Bibles, whether King James or Revised. And it is a great satisfaction to take the very Bibles in the hands of our denominations and from them establish our doctrine, our distinctive doctrines. So he's saying, if that's the case, why are we Seventh-day Adventists using the same Bibles as these other denominations that they think are in error, and from them extracting what they think is better or purer doctrine? Okay, so go to the next page. Look at the bolded section. Regarding this about the Latin, notice what he says in bold there. He says, "To make necessary the submission of documentary evidence concerning this manuscript and its origin." What Howell is saying is that Wilkinson never gives any what? He never gives any textual evidence that the old Latin is somehow better than what? The Vulgate. He just says it. Okay? Go to the bottom of that quote. Howell goes on to say, "But when this claim is overthrown," so he's talking about, we should read this paragraph. Read the whole paragraph. "The claim of the author is that the Waldensians had a pure text of the Bible transmitted direct to them from Palestine, and that this text was the foundation of the Textus Receptus. But the testimony here submitted shows that the Waldensian Bible was in all likelihood a version of the old Latin text originating in North Africa, and that this was doubtless the last revision of the old Latin text previous to and leading up to the Vulgate edited by Jerome. And some even believe it was identical with the Vulgate, and that the Bible of the Waldensians was the Vulgate itself. Therefore, the effort to establish the claim that the Waldensian Church possessed manuscripts directly descendant from the apostolic originals collapses. Neither Mr. Nolan in 1815, nor the author of the book under review in 1930, is able to convince any textual critic that this claim is a sound one. But when the claim is overthrown, the very foundation of the book under review is removed, and the conclusions which are based upon it are rendered untenable." Meaning, in the absence of any actual evidence from the Old Latin and the Vulgate, this whole thing is what? Meaningless. That's what Howell's saying. Okay? In short, Howell acknowledges that Wilkinson provided no textual evidence to support his arguments regarding the Old Latin. Consequently, Wilkinson's conclusions regarding the Old Latin / Latin Vulgate dichotomy, upon which the two streams of paradigm was founded, are untenable due to a complete lack of evidence. He's not giving any textual evidence at all. Okay? In a later chapter, titled "An Epitome of the Findings of This Section," Howell summarizes his findings from section one of his book. Please consider the following pertinent points in summation. I'm only going to read the bold, okay? First, the book before us is manifestly not an unbiased examination of the facts. Instead, there is hopeless confusion of fact, conjecture, and assertion. There are many fine passages, but the author often raises to a grandiloquent style to dazzle and impress, forgetting that assertion or inference is not proof. Meaning, and it's true, Wilkinson provides quote after quote after quote after quote, arguing from authority of other authors without giving any textual what?
Evidence.
Okay? The volume abounds in illogical conclusions collected in an oratorical grab. Dropping down. Garb, excuse me. Let me read that again. The volume abounds in illogical conclusions clothed in an oratorical garb. Dropping down. Plainly built upon an appeal to religious and denominational prejudice rather than upon solid facts or a legitimate appeal to reason, it takes advantage of the unfamiliarity of the average reader with the facts alleged and to which the average reader cannot possibly have access. Boom! That is exactly the point. That's exactly what Riplinger did in 1994 when she wrote New Age Bible versions. And again, in later books where she's talking about the Gothic Bible, they're banking on the fact that you aren't going to be able to what? To check this stuff. Okay? So it's a massive appeal to authority for which the average reader has no way of even knowing whether or not Wilkinson is telling what?
Truth.
The truth. Okay? Go to page 8. Look at number 5. Howell states the authors arbitrarily created two parallel streams of Bibles is shown not to rest upon historical authority. And 6, the contention upon the Italia as the pure Bible of the Waldensians and descended from apostolic origin is shown to be what?
Untenable.
So is Howell basically taking him to task here? Okay? So who's Howell again? Just so we're clear. Howell is a fellow Adventist. Okay? Criticizing Wilkinson's work on this topic. Okay? Look at the next one. At the beginning of section 2, on the Bible manuscripts in general, Howell states the following about how Wilkinson staked his entire argument on the, quote, pure stream of manuscripts in contradistinction to the corrupt line of manuscripts, or Catholic line of manuscripts. Quote, on Catholic influence, so much is said by the author about the pure Greek text of Erasmus. Dropping down, he states all on the pureness and integrity of Erasmus' Greek Testament, endeavoring to show that Greek manuscripts came down uncorrupted through the centuries from the apostles by way of Syria, Constantinople, and the Waldensians into the hands of Erasmus, while another stream of mutilated and corrupted manuscripts came down via Rome and the papacy. Two streams of what? Bibles. Howell is saying he doesn't prove it. Okay? Therefore, we see in Wilkinson the origin of the dichotomous placement of the Old Latin and Latin Vulgate in opposite streams of transmission. The placement of the Latin Vulgate in the corrupt stream was based upon its connection to the Catholic Church rather than an evaluation of variant readings and textual data. Okay? So, it's not based upon Wilkinson's placement of the Old Latin in the pure stream and the Vulgate in the corrupt stream is not based upon a textual evaluation. It's based upon a prejudice toward the Waldensians in the mind of, we're going to see in a minute, Seventh-day Adventist prophetess Ellen G. White. So he's trying to square all this stuff up so that it works for his particular theological system. Look at the bottom of the page. The final section of Howell's book is titled General Summary. In this section, Howell makes the following pertinent statements regarding the consideration of the two streams, our consideration of the two streams paradigm. Look at number 1. He says at the end of 8, he has failed, number 1, to trace a distinct and unbroken line of manuscripts or texts from apostolic times to the publication of the first Greek text of the New Testament by Erasmus and another distinct line by way of Rome and the papacy. He's saying he doesn't what? Doesn't prove it. Okay, top page 9. He failed to notably prove that the Italia of the Waldensians was any other than the older Latin versions originating in North Africa, spreading thence into Catholic Europe, leading up to the Vulgate, and serving as a basis for the Vulgate itself. So, the two fundamental contentions Howell says he doesn't what?
Prove.
Okay? So let's go to my summary there, skipping that next bit. No, we didn't. We need to, no. Let's read it. Much more could be said about Howell's view of our authorized Bible, review of our authorized Bible vindicated, that is beyond the scope of our current topic. Readers should not infer from my citations of Howell's review in this lesson that I agree with his conclusions about other matters related to the transmission slash textual debate, because I do not. That being said, Howell, a fellow member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, took Wilkinson to task over his Old Latin, Latin Vulgate dichotomy, and his resultant two streams of Bibles model of transmission. Summary. In 1913, Warren Eugene Howell... 1930, what did I say?
13.
I transposed, I'm sorry. In 1931, Warren Eugene Howell, a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, wrote a 125-page review of Wilkinson's book titled, A Review of Our Authorized Bible Vindicated by Benjamin G. Wilkinson. Howell's criticism of Wilkinson can be summed up as follows. Number one, the two streams of Bible's view is an arbitrary creation of the author. It is not built upon factual, textual analysis, but upon the cobbled-together summative quotations from so-called authorities. Number two, our authorized Bible vindicated is a revival of the arguments first put forth by Nolan in 1815. Number three, our authorized Bible vindicated fails to prove, on the basis of textual evidence, the dichotomous division of the Old Latin and Latin Vulgate into opposing streams of transmission. And number four, our authorized Bible vindicated fails to prove the existence of, quote, two parallel streams of Bibles. As a result, the book's foundation is removed and its conclusions are rendered untenable. Those are the summative statements of the conclusions of Howell. Okay? Now, I got 20 minutes roughly to get the last point. Is there just a quick question or comment? Is everybody with me? Can we at least acknowledge that? Is everybody with me? Okay. So that brings us to our third point then, which is the spirit of prophecy and Wilkinson's defense of this model. Okay? At some point, the exact timing of which is unclear, Benjamin G. Wilkinson responded to Howell's review by penning answers to the objections, a reply to the review of my book, Our Authorized Bible Vindicated. According to my copy of Wilkinson's reply, the Seventh-day Adventist General Council asked that it not be published in the 1930s due to the fact that, quote, feelings and rivalry were running high. Okay, so, yeah. So if you look at that, they say, back in 1930, Wilkinson published Our Authorized Bible Vindicated. Some of his college colleagues took exception to his book and criticized it publicly. Since Wilkinson, who was a professor in one of our colleges, was having his scholarship questioned, it was mandatory that he reply. This book is his reply to their review and criticism. It literally downs them on every argument. Since feelings and rivalry were running high, the General Conference of those days requested Wilkinson to not publish this work. He agreed.
That's convenient.
Yes, that's very convenient. So Wilkinson's reply is quite long and addresses many topics that are beyond the scope of this lesson. Therefore, we will focus on two aspects of Wilkinson's reply. Section 3, the Italia and the Bible of the Waldensians, and Section 7, General Arguments. Okay? As the title suggests, this section deals with Howell's claim that the foundation of Wilkinson's book was, quote, overthrown via his failure to factually establish that the Old Latin was the pure Bible of the Waldensians that had been translated from the received text. He says, quote, I have reserved a special chapter, for the Italia, the Bible of the Waldensians. I do it particularly because my reviewers announce that, quote, the decisive consideration is whether the Italia was translated direct from Palestine or whether it originated in North Africa. In fact, they make it so decisive that they say, quote, when this claim is overthrown, the very foundation of the book under review is removed, and the conclusions which are based upon it are rendered untenable. Then he says, I accept the challenge. Okay? Now, we'll get the next bullet. In this section, Wilkinson mixes, now this is important, he mixes an impressive bevy of quotations from textual critics and church historians, such as Frederick Nolan, B.F. Westcott, Frederick Kenyon, Dean Bergen, Edward Miller, Cardinal Wiseman, August Neander, the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, and many more, with the Southern Day Adventist notion of the spirit of prophecy, along with the writings of Ellen G. White, to prove that the Old Latin was a translation of the received text. So imagine like a cauldron with all the stuff in it, swirling around, and then he adds this SDA stuff into it to make his argument, okay? For now, please consider the more pertinent aspects of Wilkinson's reply, okay? Now, for the sake of time, let's go to the bold. So this is what he says. The spirit of prophecy emphasizes the fact that the Waldensians were the first people to have the scriptures translated from the original into their native tongue. She said, she being who? Ellen G. White. She said that they had the entire Bible, and whatever Bible they had, it was pure and unadulterated. How do we know that? Because Ellen G. White said so.
Through the spirit of prophecy.
Through the spirit of prophecy. Through the SDA doctrine of the spirit of prophecy. Did I skip something important?
No.
Okay. Page 11. Furthermore, the spirit of prophecy, so this is moving on down through the quote. Furthermore, the spirit of prophecy says that the scriptures of the Waldensians were pure and unadulterated. To us speaks again Great Controversy, which is Ellen G. White's book. Okay? Drop down to the next bit. Well, we should probably read this. Some manuscripts contain the whole Bible. By patient, untiring labor, sometimes in the deep, dark caverns of the earth, by the light of torches, the sacred scriptures were written out verse by verse, chapter by chapter. Angels of heaven surrounded these faithful workers. Satan had urged on the papal priests and prelates to bury the word of truth beneath the rubbish of error, heresy, and superstition. But in a most wonderful manner, it was preserved uncorrupted through all the ages of darkness. Great Controversy, page 68 and 69. Does Sister White say here that the angels held back the hand of the papists from corrupting their own Bible? No, she does not. She says that Satan urged them to bury it, to bury an error. Later, she says that Wycliffe's Bible was translated from the Latin Vulgate, which contained many errors. Great Controversy. So what's his authority for maintaining a distinction between the Old Latin and the Latin Vulgate? It's the spirit of prophecy and the writings of who? Ellen G. White. Okay? Look at the next quote. This is Wilkinson. I submit to my hearers, if I have not established the chain of the apostles down to Vulgentinus in 400 AD, I had already given a testimony to show that these same followers stretched from Vulgentinus to Claude of 820 AD. My reviewers accuse me of not bridging the gaps. Now watch. Watch what he says. How much more testimony is necessary to bridge the gaps? Add to this the statement of Sister White that they had the Bible entire and uncorrupted, then place alongside of this the facts already given that their Bible could not have been the Vulgate, but was the Old Latin, which never bowed the knee to the Vulgate, then the chain representing the Bible is also complete. Is it not strange, brethren, that I might stand before Seventh-day Adventists to defend the Waldensians and the Waldensian Bible. Is it not strange that I must stand before Seventh-day Adventists to prove that the Waldensian Bible was not the corrupt scriptures of Rome? All based on what?
Ellen White.
Ellen G. White. So he's got his mix of quotes, and then he pours into it the spirit of the SDA doctrine, the spirit of prophecy, and the writings of Ellen G. White and the Great Controversy, and out of the mix comes the two streams of one. Bibles. Okay? Wilkinson concludes this section of his reply by presenting something he calls, quote, the completed chain, a short review of authorities. This section summarizes the authorities he believes establish his argument regarding the old Latin Bible of the Waldensians. Okay? Now this is too long to read all this. I gave you all of it so that you can read it on your own time, since I know you're all dying to read this, okay? Go to page 12. So previous, he quotes Bergen and Miller in the traditional text, and then he says, add to this Sister White's testimony that the Waldensians had, quote, not a faith newly received. Their religious beliefs was the inheritance of their forefathers, Great Controversy. The Waldensians were the first of all peoples of Europe to attain the translation of the Holy Scriptures. Drop down to the next bold. Is not the chain complete? So when he's talking about the chain, he's talking about all these quotes he's given. Is not the chain complete? The spirit of prophecy and the plain statements of history unite to tell us that we do have represented in the received text the same Bible that the Waldensian church possessed in manuscripts descended from the apostolic originals. So there's the uniting, in case you were wondering where that was. I just told you. Go to top page 13. Conspicuously missing from Wilkinson's argumentation is a single textual example to substantiate his claims. Most troubling is Wilkinson's reliance upon the SDA doctrine of the spirit of prophecy and the writings of prophetess Ellen G. White. Mark well that Wilkinson cannot make his arguments regarding the two streams of Bibles without heavy reliance upon the doctrines of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which most King James advocates would deem heretical. Why do you think Fuller obscured his Adventism? So the next section, general arguments. This is really long. I gave you the whole thing. We're only going to read what's in bold. Okay? Section 7, general arguments. In this section of his reply, it is in this section of his reply that Wilkinson deals with Howell's criticism of the two streams of Bible's paradigm. Subchapter 1 of Section 7 is titled The Parallel Streams of Bibles. In an effort to conserve time and space, we will only deal with the most pertinent information from this subchapter. This stuff here about the appendix, I'm not doing that. I'm just going to get rid of that. I just included all of it here. Okay? We're only going to read what's in bold. Okay? So, my reviewers claim, so I'm on the open bullet, my reviewers claim, Section 1, page 9, that the two parallel streams of Bibles is arbitrarily created and does not rest upon historical authority. In my book, however, he proved conclusively, that both the Textus Receptus and the Vaticanus manuscript were already in existence in the days of Constantine, rivals to one another and constituting opposing Bibles. I also proved historically in the same chapter that the Waldensian Bible was from the Textus Receptus. Now the spirit of prophecy says that the Waldensian Bible was of apostolic origin, uncorrupted, entire, and teaching apostolic Christianity. Can he make that argument without including the SDA doctrine of the spirit of prophecy? Apparently not. Look at the next bold section. The spirit of prophecy endorses this line of reasoning I gave in my book. That quotation from Sister White, which shows that the Waldensians possessed a Bible which came from apostolic days, was entire, was unadulterated, and was ever sought by the fury of the papists to be corrupted. The spirit of prophecy, however, tells us that angels restrained their malignant hatred and their efforts to bury the Waldensian Bible under a mass of error and superstition. The spirit of prophecy further tells us that the Bible of Wycliffe was from the Latin Vulgate and contained many errors, but the Vulgate was a Catholic Bible. On the other hand, the spirit of prophecy tells us that the Greek text of Erasmus corrected those errors, but the Greek text of Erasmus was the Textus Receptus. Therefore, the Waldensians had a pure Bible from the beginning based upon the Textus Receptus or in harmony with it. The reasoning then goes thus. A. The Waldensians endorsed what was the Apostolic Bible. B. The Reformers endorsed what was the Waldensian Bible. C. Sister White endorsed the Bible of the Reformation and the Waldensian Bible. And D. The Waldensians could not have guarded the Vulgate because it contained many errors. Two strings of Bibles. You following what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nothing more to read right now on 14. Nothing more to read on 15 except the last statement. Bold on 15. I think now that I have given evidence abundant enough from this short document and amply backed by authorities to show the two parallel streams of Bibles. Okay, now let me just finish. So if we would have read all this, if we would have read everything on 14, everything on 15 leading up to that, okay, here's what we would have seen. Regarding this lengthy citation from the pen of Wilkinson, researcher Stephen Avery stated the following on the Pure Bible Forum. He said, quote, "Even putting aside the appeal to Ellen G. White, what they call the spirit of prophecy, this muddled mess contains a boatload of fallacies and errant claims. Basically, Wilkinson has ignored all the fundamental problems of his two streams theory and given a grab bag of quotes and arguments that are interesting but worthless to the actual point. Notice how neither Wilkinson publication, so that would be Our Authorized Bible Vindicated, or answers to the objections, a reply to the review of my book, Our Authorized Bible Vindicated, gives what would be the proof of the pudding. A list of dozens of major variants were supposedly theoretically, the old Latin manuscripts agree with the received text, while the Vulgate has Alexandrian, Vaticanus, Westcott, and Hort recension readings. Wilkinson gives not dozens, not ten, not five, not one. Never does he give a single textual example to establish any of this. Okay? The Wilkinson old Latin good line, Vulgate bad line theory is simply worthless. It is, however, a fine example of building a theory on hopeful reading, twisting, conjecture, and sand. And in the Wilkinson idea nation, a misplaced faith in the spirit of prophecy. Okay? So I'm going to get the summary, and then we'll take any questions. So Wilkinson has, now here's what he's done. This is me talking here. Wilkinson has taken the conclusory statements of previous authors and assembled them in a particular manner to construct an argument. Okay? No one before Wilkinson had ever strung together this impressive line of citations to make such an argument. Next, Wilkinson added the Southern Day Adventist doctrine of the spirit of prophecy by appealing to the writings of Ellen G. White to corroborate his strung together claim of quotations. Therefore, Wilkinson's argument regarding the two parallel streams of Bibles is a massive appeal to authority, with some heretical Southern Day Seventh-day Adventist teaching mixed in for good measure. The substantive basis for the two streams paradigm is built upon sinking sand rather than upon an evaluation of the textual facts. The net result was the creation of a transmissional paradigm that erected a false dichotomy and presented its would-be adherents with an illogical either-or dilemma. Okay? So, how then? So this is the question you should be having, right? So then how did a transmissional model from an obscure Southern-day Adventist author become the main paradigm of the King James-only movement? We'll have to look at that next week. Okay. All right, any questions or comments about any of this? Craig?
Well, where to begin, really? Luke 8:17 says, "For nothing is secret that shall not be made manifest, neither anything hid that shall not be known and come abroad." So, God's word is forever settled in heaven, and for and he clearly, you can see that what he's trying to do is, again, use anything he can to support his argument, and he's doing that for himself. He's not doing that because it certainly does not appear that he wants to report the truth on the matter. And
who's the he we're talking about here?
Wilkinson.
Okay.
So here's my thing. God says his word's forever settled in heaven, but if Ellen G. White says this, this, and that, well, then, we should use that to support our claims and use that to say that, well, she said this, the spirit of prophecy said this, and then it also said this, and it also said that, so therefore it's true. It doesn't matter what the Bible says, though.
Yeah, it's a mess, okay? So let me just make a couple comments, okay? Now, I have to say, it's disturbing to me to see that Wilkinson is defending the two streams of Bible paradigm on the basis of the spirit of prophecy. Southern Seventh-day Adventist doctrine, right? Because most people that I know who are Pauline dispensationalists would absolutely reject the idea that prophecy is still happening in the way that he's asserting that it is in these books.
Right.
Yet the model of transmission that is being adopted was first put out by a guy who can't even make the argument without appealing to that. Okay? Now, I'm going to say this to you, and you can take it for what it's worth. You can agree or disagree. Wilkinson is a Seventh-day Adventist. He believes this stuff. Okay? I at least can appreciate the fact that he's wrong and in error, but that he believes what he says, right? To me, the real problem is Fuller. Fuller knew who he was. Fuller knew who Wilkinson was. He obscures Wilkinson's identity on purpose, reproduces 10 of his 16 chapters in this book, doesn't tell his authorship or his readership who Wilkinson is, and then selectively edits the extracts that he includes to brush aside the fact that the whole idea of the two streams came from somebody that the fundamental Baptist readership of this book never would have paid any attention to it had they known that Wilkinson was what?
SDA.
Okay. That's just the reality of what we're dealing with here. Okay. So meanwhile, how many generations of King James advocates have read Fuller's book, never realizing who Wilkinson was, and accepted all the stuff that Fuller had to say as automatically what?
Well, they have.
True. They absolutely have.
Or they've chosen to ignore it, too.
Or they've chosen to ignore it, too. Both are true. Okay? So next week, what I want to do so let me just leave you with this question. Do we really want to have a model of transmission that back when it was originally enunciated, back in the 1930s, could not have been so without a reliance on a doctrine, the spirit of prophecy, that we would not view as legitimate. That doesn't seem to me to be something we really want to do. Okay? Now, what I want to do next Sunday with our lesson is I want to look at how this idea of the two streams was moved out of obscure Southern Day Adventist literature into the mainstream of the discussion on the Bible version debate in fundamentalism. Okay? Does that make sense? Because that should be the next question. Well, how did that idea become what it is now? And that's what I want to look at next time. Okay? So, I appreciate your attention. I'm going to stop the video. If you have another question, you can